fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. The Golden State Warriors won Game 2 of the NBA Finals on Sunday night in Oakland. Behind big second and fourth quarters, the Warriors pulled away from Cleveland 122-103. Steph Curry made an NBA Finals record 9 three-pointers on his way to a 33-point game. Before the finals started, Curry talked about whether he might be able to put the final bullet point on his career resume, winning the MVP award in the finals. And he is well on his way. Curry scored 29 points in the Warriors' Game 1 overtime win.
Back if we win this championship and I don't win in finals MVP, I'm going to be smiling just as wide, you know, and just as big. But I'm going to play aggressively, confidently, you know, with that right energy and motivation to help my team win. And usually when I'm in that mindset, you know, good things happen. Whether that means it's a finals MVP or not, who cares? But I'm going to be playing like it for sure.
After the game, which saw LeBron James lead Cleveland with 29 points and 13 assists, but also see the team shoot just 9 of 27 on three-pointers and 41% overall, all anyone wanted to talk about was Curry's long three-pointer with less than 8 minutes to play as the shot clock was expiring. The shot gave the Warriors a 14-point lead and seemed to demoralize the Cavs, who had played good defense for 23 seconds. Klay Thompson, who scored 20 points for the Warriors on a sore ankle, was impressed.
Probably the one that stands out the most to probably all you guys and everyone in this arena when he was about 7 seconds on the clock and just kept going backwards. I don't know why, but he just threw it up, and I don't think he had any chance of going in, but that was kind of like a dagger shot and just gave us all the momentum back. So I think we went up 14 points, so that was my favorite, and hit nothing but net, and that was just a very good sight to see.
Regardless of how it looked to Thompson, Curry said he was just trying to get some space in order to take a shot.
I mean, that situation, I was trying to get some space. I thought I had a layup at first, and I fumbled the ball and then tried to see where the defense was, and Kevin Love was right on me, and I actually lost a dribble for a hot second. And the only way to get a shot was to keep going back. And, I mean, I try all sorts of shots at some point or another, but at that point it's just feel and let it go, and thankfully it went in. And a big moment where we had a significant lead. We could extend it a little bit and create some separation down the stretch, and it was a cool moment for sure.
James was asked whether it's tough to see Curry make shots that the average player might not even attempt.
Every shot that he takes that goes in, he has a business of making them. That's what he does. So we shouldn't be surprised or deflated at it. You know, take the ball out, move it forward, and try to execute on another end.
Curry broke Ray Allen's long-standing NBA Finals record of 8 three-pointers. Steve Kerr, the Warriors coach, was impressed.
It's hard to think back to all the games, but he was tremendous. And, 9 threes and seemed to hit a big shot every time we needed one. He was fantastic.
Curry says he's never trying to play for big stats, but he called breaking Allen's record pretty cool.
Regardless of how the season went, that's a pretty cool deal to accomplish, knowing who's held the record for, probably 6-8 years. But at the end of the day, it's all about trying to get a win and doing whatever you can to make that happen. I always say, like, if we focus on that, good things happen individually all across the board. So I never woke up and was like, all right, let's go get 9 threes and get the record. It's more so just about playing the game the right way, having good intentions out there on the court, and good things happen. So pretty special night, and hopefully some more special things happen to get two more wins.
That's Golden State's spark plug and leader, Steph Curry, talking about his 9 3-pointers to break the NBA Finals record on Sunday night. When he talks about two more wins, he's looking forward to the required 4 wins in order to win the best of 7 series. The Finals moves to Cleveland, Ohio for games 3 and 4, where the Cavs have played well during these playoffs. Game 3 is on Wednesday night, June 6th. In NBA playoff history, not many teams come back to win a series from a 2-0 deficit. But it already happened this year, as the Cavs advanced to the finals after falling behind to Boston 2-0. LeBron James said the odds have been against him since he was a boy, and he's okay with that at this point in his life.
The odds have been against me since I was 5-6 years old, you know. So, you know, we're talking about basketball here, you know. It seems like I come up here and tell you guys this all the time. The odds has been stacked up against me since I was, you know, an adolescent. So, you know, I put our team in position to try to win a championship, to compete for a championship. And, you know, it's my job to make sure that we're as laser focused as possible, do my job, and continue to instill confidence into my teammates until the last horn sounds. So that's my job. That's my responsibility. That's my obligation. And I need to continue to do that, which I will.
That's LeBron James talking about the odds being against the Cavaliers in the NBA Finals after falling behind the Warriors 2-0. Klay Thompson said the Warriors are ready for Game 3 in Cleveland and know that the Cavs came back to win a series during these playoffs after trailing 2-0.
We're extremely focused. This team has been down 2-0 in the last series and came back to win it. So it's nothing to feel happy about, being up 2-0. This team plays great at home, and we expect their other guys to even play better at home too, not just LeBron. So we're not going to relax at all, because this team's been a down and out before and counted out by the media. And we're not going to focus on that. We're just going to focus on what we can do to win Game 3.
I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America.
VOA. Here in Washington, D.C., many people are still buzzing about the local NHL team, the Washington Capitals, who defeated the Las Vegas Golden Knights in the league's championship series on Saturday night to take a 2-1 lead. The Capitals won Game 3 3-1, just a walk across the mall from VOA's studios. Game 4 of the series is Monday night. If Washington manages to win the Stanley Cup, the trophy given to the league's champion, it'll be the first cup for the Capitals, who joined the NHL in 1975. It will also be the first title for a Washington team in a traditional North American sport since the Washington Redskins won the NFL championship, the Super Bowl, in January 1992. Russian superstar Alex Ovechkin got the scoring started for the Capitals on Saturday night. Ovechkin is looking to break the Capitals' playoff record for goals. He needs just one more. We're joined now by Samson Omale with an update on a number of newsworthy notes for African sports fans, including an update on the players who will be traveling to the World Cup later this month in Russia. Welcome, Samson.
We begin with the 2018 FIFA World Cup, which is exactly 10 days away. Tunisia and Nigeria named their final 23-man squad at the end of their international friendlies this past weekend. For the Carthage Eagles of Tunisia, who drew 2-2 with Turkey, coach Nabil Maloul included Wahib Kaziri, who has battled to overcome a thigh injury over the last month, and fixed again midfielder Mohamed Amine Ben Amor in their final 23-man squad for the World Cup. For the Super Eagles of Nigeria, Chelsea defender Olaiyo and Boraspor midfielder Michael Agu will not be among those that will be going to the 2018 World Cup in Russia after Nigerian coach Gernot Rohr omitted them from his final 23-man squad for the tournament on Sunday. The Super Eagles had lost 2-1 to the Three Lions of England on Saturday in a warm-up game ahead of the World Cup at the Wembley Stadium. Staying with the World Cup, Egypt, one of the five African representatives to the World Cup, appears to be missing the team's star striker, Mohamed Salah. Coach Hector Cooper has admitted that Mo Salah's absence is affecting Egypt's World Cup preparations. Egypt have now gone 5 games without victory, stretching back to last October. Salah is still in doubt for Egypt's opening match in Group A on June 15th against Uruguay after suffering a shoulder injury in the Champions League final for Liverpool late last month. And on to Southern Africa, where Zimbabwe goalkeeper George Chigova saved 3 penalties in the post-match shootout as the Warriors booked a semi-final place in the 2018 COSAFA Cup with a 4-1 victory that followed a tense 1-1 draw in the 90 minutes. Host South Africa were on the wrong end of a shootout result as they were ousted from the competition by Madagascar, who triumphed 4-3 on penalties after the match finished 0-0 in regulation time. It means that semi final lineup is complete, with defending champions Zimbabwe to take on Lesotho, while Zambia will clash with Madagascar. Both of those matches will be played at the new Peter Makoba Stadium on Wednesday. And now to athletics news. Over 60 Kenyan athletes are expected to take part in the 21st Senior African Athletics Championship to be staged in Asaba, Delta State, Nigeria from August the 1st to the 5th. Athletics Kenya President Jack Tuwei said they will take the Asaba 2018 event seriously, since the top 2 runners from each discipline will qualify for the IWAF Continental Cup scheduled in Ostrava, the Czech Republic, on September the 8th to the 9th. In cricket news, Kagiso Rabada, the world's number 1 test bowler, was at the weekend named South Africa's Cricketer of the Year. The award came at the end of a 12-month period during which Rabada was a consistent match winner, taking 72 wickets at an average of 19.52 in 12 tests going back to his series in England last July. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
That's Samson Omale keeping us up to date on the latest in African sports. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. There's one other African sports nugget I have to report. Over the weekend here in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, the Springboks of South Africa took on Wales in a friendly rugby match at Robert F. Kennedy Stadium. With a lineup containing mostly young players, the Springboks fell to Wales 22-20. One report from a British newspaper said the match got off to a slow start that would not have converted any of the Americans in attendance into rugby fans. About 21,000 people attended the game. At the end, however, those fans saw Ryan Elias score a try in the 75th minute for Wales' final margin of victory. Newly appointed South Africa manager Rassie Erasmus lost the first match of his tenure. South Africa has 3 matches coming up later this month against England, all at home. The first fixture is June 9th at Ellis Park. Many rugby fans are looking for a completely different squad to take the field against England. We'll see how Erasmus does with a full-fledged veteran team.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Let's catch up now with what the sports world is buzzing about today with my colleague, Gwen Uten, who has some big news from the French Open tennis tournament in Paris. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. At a Monday press conference, American Serena Williams announced she is withdrawing from the French Open.
Unfortunately, I've been having some issues with my pec muscle, and unfortunately it's been getting worse to a point where right now I can't actually serve, so it's kind of hard to play when I can't physically serve.
The surprise turn of events comes just before a much-anticipated showdown between Serena and on-court rival Maria Sharapova of Russia. Serena says she first felt a problem on Saturday in her match against Germany's Julia Gerges. The next day, Serena played in a doubles match with her sister Venus, and she tried to manage the problem with lots of taping and support, but to no avail.
I'm beyond disappointed. You know, I gave up so much, from time with my daughter to time with my family, and I put everything on the court, you know, and all for this moment. And so it's really difficult to be in this situation, but I always, for now in my life, I just try to always think positive and just think of the bigger picture and hopefully the next events and the rest of the year.
The French Open marks Serena's first Grand Slam appearance since giving birth last September, and she's worked hard to get back in shape in time to make her comeback.
Physically, I'm doing great. And, you know, again, it hasn't been easy. I sacrificed so much to be at this event. And I can only take solace in the fact that I'm going to continue to get better. And I had such a wonderful performance in my first Grand Slam back. And I just feel like it's only going to do better. And I'm coming up on, hopefully, surfaces that are my absolute favorite to play on and that I do best on. So hopefully I, you know, can continue to heal and be able to play those events.
Serena told reporters she will have an MRI scan in Paris on Tuesday, and she will stay in the French capital under supervision. Next month's Wimbledon tournament will be up in the air until she receives her results. In other French Open news, Rafael Nadal is getting closer to sealing his 11th title. On Monday, he defeated Maximilian Marturer of Germany 6-3, 6-2, 7-6. Novak Djokovic advanced to the quarterfinals on Sunday with his win over Fernando Verdasco of Spain, 6-3, 6-4, 6-2. And on the women's side, American Sloane Stephens claimed victory over Anett Kondavait of Estonia in straight sets, 6-2, 6-0. Sloane's quarterfinal match will be played against Daria Kasatkina of Russia. Moving on to soccer, with 9 days until the World Cup kickoff, here is a fun fact for the number 9. Two players share the honors as top scorers at the FIFA Confederations Cup. Brazil's Ronaldinho and Mexico's Cuauhtemoc Blanco were pitted against each other in 1999 and each scored 9 goals. Mexico hoisted the country's first ever FIFA trophy on their home turf in a 4-3 victory over the favored Brazilian team. Blanco went on to win the silver ball and silver boot for his outstanding performance, and he is regarded as one of the finest players Mexico has ever produced. This year's FIFA FIFA World Cup kicks off in Russia on June 14th. And that's all from me, Dan. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. Hope you had a great weekend, and we hope to see Serena back in action very soon. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Here's one other note as we straddle the 9th and 10th day to go before the World Cup. He was in the news last week, resigning as the manager for Real Madrid. But let's not forget that Zinedine Zidane of France was involved in one of the most infamous moments of World Cup history in 2006 when he headbutted Italian defender Marco Materazzi with just 10 minutes remaining in extra time. The Italians went on to win that World Cup on penalties. Let's catch up with Mugube Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda, who is up close with the high-revving engines of the women behind the wheel and in the passenger seats of rally cars. Welcome, Mugube.
Music plays in the air as drivers ready themselves to ignite their car's engines at Kako Circuit in Masaka district of central Uganda. One of them is Susan Moonge, popularly known by her fan's name as Super Lady, because of her courage to take up men in rallying.
I do not want to compete a lady, just in case it's a double circuit and we have lane A and B. I would love to go with a man. Why? We have that inferiority complex at times. We think what men can do, women can't do. And we also get it from men. So I just want to prove a point that since it is a car, we can drive a street car, therefore we can also drive a rally car, as long as you have the heart, as long as you are committed, as long as you have passion for the sport.
Moonge started rallying in 2007 and won the National Rally Championship just 4 years later in 2011. She has won various accolades from the government and civil society as a woman activist. 21-year-old Barbara Nabachwa says she's inspired by Moonge's exploits.
For sure, Susan Moonge, she's so different from other ladies. You understand, because that lady, she's working, she has kids, she's married, but she has that different heart, the one who desires to be with. She's confident. I like that lady. She's different, so different. She's at top, for sure. I like that lady.
Another fan, Mebu Mirembe, is also moved by Moonge.
She inspires me because it's not easy to compete with men, but if she has that big heart, I think I can also do it. Because she's really a strong woman to stand out in those men.
Another female who enjoys participating in motor riding is Midori Chibuka, a navigator. She says her role shows that both men and women need to work together to develop their communities.
When I'm into that cockpit, my driver can't do anything without me. I tell him what to do. Start, do this. So I like that. I realized I can do whatever a man can do. I try and I fight as much to be at the same level. Yes, and to compete.
Katende Muchibi is the chairman of the Sport Commission in Uganda. Muchibi says cultural beliefs hinder women participation in sports, as they are believed to stay at home or do household chores. Muchibi says the only way to change this is to have many women compete in various sports, including motorsport.
According to statistics, women form the largest percentage of our population, and therefore it is prudent for us to try and engage that percentage of the population that is dominating in other spheres. So we as a sport all ought to promote the women in that particular cause. Remember, we are also trying to encourage women to discover and achieve their potentials. Women can achieve more only if we give them a chance, and this is what we are doing as our role, to move them into that position where they can feel they are champions.
So far, Muchibi says there are two rally drivers and three navigators in the sport dominated by men. For the Sunny Side of Sport, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Mugume. I know some of the best race car drivers in the world are women, so there's no reason why these rally car drivers in Africa can't get behind the wheel. And that wraps up the June 4th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Workinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. Thanks also to Sonny Young for letting me take his place these last few days. I'm Dan Friedel in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 8th, health officials in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, or DRC, reported two confirmed cases of Ebola in the country's northwest. It is the DRC's ninth outbreak of the disease since the discovery of the virus near the country's Ebola River, and the second since the largest ever Ebola epidemic swept across West Africa from 2014 to 2015. Ebola is a viral hemorrhagic fever with average mortality rates ranging from 25 to 90%, depending on the specific strain. According to the World Health Organization, by the end of December 2015, the epidemic that devastated West Africa sickened 28,616 people and killed 11,310 across 10 countries. Ebola is a disease of the thick forest, where people and wild animals exist in close proximity. Here, people are more likely to eat bushmeat or wild-caught game that may be infected with the disease. That is one of the reasons why Ebola is endemic in the DRC, meaning it is always present there at some level. Since the earliest cases of this outbreak were reported in the DRC's forested region of Bikoro, they have spread to Mbandaka, a major port city. There is now a possibility that the infection could travel down the Congo River to more densely populated areas, such as Kinshasa, the capital, with its population of 10 million. On May 22nd, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Alex Azar announced that the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, will contribute up to $7 million at this stage to combat the Ebola outbreak in the DRC. This is in addition to the $1 million USAID committed a few days earlier to help prevent the spread of this deadly disease. The United States is also sending a team of public health experts to join the efforts of the Ministry of Health of the DRC, the World Health Organization, and other partners. At the same time, we call on the global community to make funding available immediately to support the government of the DRC and the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Fund, the Contingency Fund for Emergencies, in order to contain the outbreak as soon as possible before it spreads further and harms more people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we look at the heroic rescue of a child by a migrant from Mali and examine the forces that pushed him out of Africa and into Europe. What are the factors that propel people to leave their country? And why is Europe such an alluring destination? On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.